You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Well, on this eve of Tax Day, Peace Watch thought it would be interesting, informing, intriguing to shed a little light on who's paying what with regard to federal taxes as we go in the midst of this war. We spoke with John Cavanaugh with the Institute for Policy Studies regarding a study that he's done on the corporations and those who are profiting from this war.
Corporations, which as recently as for much of the post-war period, were a pillar of the U.S. tax base. If you go back to the time of World War II, over half of federal taxes were paid by corporations. So when General Motors said what's good for General Motors is good for America and vice versa, there was at least some truth to that statement. They were paying taxes, they were employing people, and so on. What's happened over the past 50 years, and it's really accelerated over the past decade, is that corporations have gone global. More and more what they do is they'll set up subsidiaries in countries like Bermuda, where the tax rates are either very low or non-existent. They'll declare more and more of their profits in these tax havens, and through that means they are greatly reducing the amount of taxes they're paying. And so instead of paying, it's rare to find a corporation that pays 35% of its profits in taxes. More, on average, you'll find corporations paying 5 to 15%. Mm. And you'll even find corporations, big corporations, making lots of money that are getting rebates. Just to give you an example, right now when all of us are focused on these huge defense contractors that are making a lot of money off of the war in Iraq, they, on average, in the late 90s, were only paying 12% of their profits in taxes.
Instead of the 35 statutory corporate income.
Yeah.
So, in other words, what you're saying is you'll take a huge American company and they will go to another country and therefore not be held responsible for having to pay the 35% corporate income tax that U.S. companies have to pay.
Exactly. I mean, take Halliburton, which is on everybody's mind, the big company that got the contract to rebuild Iraq's oil wells and that was chaired by Dick Cheney, Vice President Dick Cheney, before he became vice president. Under Cheney's leadership, that company set up 54 subsidiaries of its little sub-companies under Halliburton in these places like Bermuda and the Cayman Islands. They're really small island states that set themselves up as for tax breaks for large corporations.
Although I guess one could argue that, well, they need our services in these places, and we are, in fact, providing services and doing work in these countries.
Well, you know, in the end, they get very little. What happens when a company sets up its headquarters or a subsidiary in a place like Bermuda is it just means they hold one meeting there. So they do come in and they spend lavishly, I suppose, on food and drinks, but it's one day a year and then they leave. This really isn't building up. So they're not getting much out of it. And, of course, the corporations are getting an enormous amount out of it. At a time when I think everyone is thinking about national sacrifice, the big companies that in some ways are the biggest beneficiaries of this war are not contributing to the tax base and instead are getting these great tax breaks.
Yeah, obviously this is a legal loophole that they're slipping through, or actually it's a loophole, but the question is it legal? Is this illegal to do this?
Well, it's legal, but it ought to be illegal. What has happened is that different countries have allowed this to happen. Now, what many people in the United States feel should be done is to have the federal government say to companies, if you want to get U.S. government contracts, you should not take advantage of these tax dodges overseas. And in fact, there was a bill in the U.S. Congress last year that would have done this, and this activity is so outrageous. Most Americans find it horrendous that companies get all these breaks from government and aren't paying taxes, and so I think this was slated to be part of the corporate reform effort of last year in the wake of the Enron and WorldCom scandals, and it simply was never passed. And then, of course, starting in September, George Bush changed the national topic of conversation to Iraq, and much of the needed corporate reform went off the table. A number of groups like Move On and Working Assets right now are trying to revive interest around tax day. And passing such a bill, there are apparently enough members of Congress to pass it. And as usual, it's the Republican leadership that's refusing to let this bill come up for a vote.
Mm. Well, the Bush administration has appointed Jay Garner, the former president of Psi Technologies, to basically run or govern, rule Iraq during the post-Saddam transition, or I guess some would say occupation. Psi Technologies is a defense contractor. I believe it was responsible for the Patriot missile system that performed so poorly during the Gulf War. Did it have contracts in the Iraq War?
You know, as I understand it, the company that Jay Garner ran, Psi Technology, makes the guidance systems, the high technology guidance systems for a number of the missile systems that were used in this war. So yes, here is a guy whose company, whose former company, has benefited from the defense contracts that have gone into the Iraq War, now being the man who is chosen to in essence run, become the governor general of sorts of Iraq. And it is outrageous, and it will, by the way, be seen by people in the region, in the Middle East, as a slap in the face that the U.S. would pick someone who has no experience in building democracy. He has experience in making profits and in killing people. That's what Jay Garner is. It's a terrible choice.
He also has close ties to Israel.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. He's also, as I understand it, he's been on trips to Israel. He signed statements that were quite one-sided in support of Israel. That, too, will inflame anger in the very region that the U.S. claims it's trying to bring democracy to.
Many observers of this war with Iraq view it as an opportunity for the Bush administration and its billionaire friends, they say, many of whom are in the oil and weapons business, an opportunity for them to reap greater profits from going to war, ergo you have the signs "No Blood for Oil." But what kind of profits are these weapons contractors experiencing in general?
Well, see, I think there are three groups of companies that you could accuse of war profiteering now over this war. And all of them do make good profits, but there's been a global economic recession since the middle of 2000, and so none of them are doing as well as they did in the heyday of the 1990s.
John Cavanna, there's so much more here in your report I'd like to talk about, so we'll have to save that for another day, perhaps tomorrow.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd be happy to.
John Cavanna of the Institute for Policy Studies. An estimated 35,000 peace activists marched through the streets of the nation's capital over the weekend, snarling traffic, interrupting business as usual, while peacefully exercising their First Amendment rights to oppose the invasion of Iraq. At the same time, the conservative Support the Troops counter rally filled the front of the mall with a few thousand flag-waving demonstrators. The sponsoring groups included the Claire Booth Loose Policy Institute, a conservative women's group, Citizens United, a group opposed to U.S. participation in the UN and international courts, the Young Americas Foundation, a well-financed group that promotes conservative ideas on college campuses, and the Free Republic, a coalition of grassroots conservatives that talk to each other through their internet site of the same name. The rally was promoted by conservative commentators and hosts on talk radio and the Fox TV network. Independent reporter Eddie Becker attended the rally and filed this snapshot report with an interview with this 30-something couple, Timmy Turner and Heather Merrill.
Tell me what your sign says.
God bless America, God bless our troops.
Our troops are our heroes.
Uh-huh. And how far did you come from?
We flew all the way from Pennsylvania to be here today.
How did you hear about the event?
It was on Fox News. I saw it on Hannity and Combs just last night. Saw G. Gordon Liddy on there, and so we decided last night to make these signs and book a flight and come here and support our troops.
Do you know any of the troops?
No, I don't. But I just, I'm so proud of them. I've never been more proud to be an American than I am right now. The way they're conducting themselves over there. And when I saw the statue come down and the liberation of Iraq, it was just a profound moment. And I think it's one I'll never forget.
Does it make any difference that they weren't able to find yet, at least, weapons of mass destruction.
It doesn't make a difference.
No, it does.
So what do you think the real reason was that we went there?
I think the real reason was because our security as a nation. George Bush realized that this horrible dictator was making these weapons and possibly do us harm, I believe, as well for the liberation of the Iraqi people.
I mean, that's an important point. There are a lot of other peoples in the world that aren't free. What should the United States do for them?
Well, we should talk to the dictators and explain to them what a great thing freedom is. Everybody yeah. deserves to be free in this world, not just America.
Exactly.
And they could take Iraq as an example of how happy they are to be free right now, and they can learn from that and think maybe this is what I would want as my people as well.
Yeah.
Well, you know as well as I do that dictators don't give up their dictatorship
exactly.
voluntarily.
Yeah. Exactly.
So where should we go next?
Depending on where evidence falls, I mean, North Korea is definitely a major problem right now. But
so
I mean,
North Korea would be on your first list.
North
now,
Korea.
After
and,
that?
And, well, depending on what's happening right now, I mean, if the high Iraqi generals or possibly even Saddam or whoever have escaped to Syria. I mean,
Syria that's, would be two.
That's okay. part of this agenda.
Now, a lot of people say that we're, like, if we were to fight Vietnam today, we would win. How about Vietnam?
I think we take one thing at a time right now. I would say definitely Syria and North Korea.
Who are the most unfree people that we could go after now?
Well, I mean, North Korea is a huge, huge threat, but I believe that can be hopefully taken care of diplomatically, possibly through the help of China.
You know, they
hopefully.
Have a socialist system.
Right.
What do you think of socialism?
In
Canada.
Agree with it. I do not agree with
okay,
it.
Okay, in Canada, they yeah. have socialist medicine and some other, like, forms of socialism.
Right.
And they're pretty close. And, like, our manifest destiny went east-west, but it was like the War of 1812. We should have won it. Had we fought the War of 1812 now, I think we could win it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I believe, you know, I mean, let's be real. We could probably walk into any of these other countries and with our military might we have right now, you know, take control.
How about the French?
So I've been
boycotting them.
I've been to Paris many times. And
no French perfumes for you.
No way, not anymore.
We've been there, I mean, at least 10 times, and we never are going back. And I'm not saying we go in with military might for France, but...
we don't like them.
I mean, they don't like us either. So, you know, they've never liked us.
Now, they say that, like, the United States isn't involved in going in there for the oil, although, like, Iraq has the second largest reserves in
right.
the world, right?
Right.
Do you think to prove that, we have to allow the French and the Germans to keep their oil concessions?
No.
No.
No way.
They don't deserve that at all.
No, no oil concessions. And all the debt that Iraq owes those countries, definitely, I mean, wiped away.
So who should decide that? How much say should the United States, which has invested $90 billion in this, I don't know how much it'll be, like, overall. How much say should the United States have in deciding on what decisions are made by the Iraqis?
Well, initially, we should have some say, but eventually the Iraqi people will have that say.
Yes.
That's what freedom's all about.
Now, if they say, well, yeah, we do have to, like, honor our international debt and all of that, would you want to overthrow that government?
Sure.
If they wanted to pay, they wanted to pay the French back. How far would you go?
The government that owed that debt is no longer in power. Why should we hold these poor Iraqi people? All he did with that money is build palaces, build weapons of mass destruction, build torture chambers to torture these people. I don't think we should hold these people in debt for their debt of their past dictator.
Do you think there'll ever be a perfect world? Do you think that somehow, sometimes when we try to do that, we pull up the weed, it just sort of like sprouts and spreads, and we drop seeds and cause more things to get worse sometimes?
Well, this is quite an experiment we're embarking on right now, and I think, you know, we'll see if that's what you mean by a perfect world.
Look, thanks very much for the interview.
You know what? There's been so many anti-war rallies, and I'm fed up with hearing this liberal gibberish, and I'm coming out to speak my piece.
That was Eddie Becker reporting for Peace Watch. Among the thousands who participated in rallies, marches, and town hall meetings in Greater Washington this weekend was Reverend Graylin Hagler, the pastor of the Plymouth Congregational Church, and he provided a people's plan for moving forward.
This government says there's no money. When you talk about health care, this government says that there is no money. But somehow when they go off into this economic greedy adventure in Iraq, they can find $80 billion as a down payment on a war when they've claimed they have no money. Sisters and brothers, we need to realize the hypocrisy of that. And $80 billion is just the beginning of what they're going to put in place to continue to maintain an army of occupation in Iraq, an army of occupation in Afghanistan. And if they have their way, they will be in the next few months in Syria. And we need to not delude ourselves of that fact. And we need to begin to create the type of political movement, one that makes it expensive for these politicians to go along in this process. Part of it is not only at the polls. I'm not just talking about at the polls because it gets linked with being in the street, right? We got to be in the streets to show that the people are moving, the people are not content, the people are not going along with CNN or Fox News or any of those other in-bed reporters. Did I say in-bed? I meant embedded, right? Reporters, right? But we also need to realize that they've been slick. They've been slick. It was a perfect strategy to put reporters in with fighting unions because they were already subjective in their reporting, and that made them even more subjective. If you go and you look at what's portrayed on the news, and then you go look at some international news channel, you will see the same footage, but it will be showing you something very different. For example, I saw one report where CNN was talking about the Marines putting down resistance under a viaduct in Baghdad in Iraq. And so they were talking about just how triumphant they were. And then when you turned on French TV, you saw the same scene, except they were bringing people out on stretchers that were also U.S. Marines that was never, ever shown in the same scene and the same footage in CNN. Because what they have been geared up to do is to show us a war that is basically bloodless, even though we know there's a whole lot of blood on our hands, a war where there's no casualty, so to speak. Sisters and brothers, we've always end up, as you know, in this country, looking and biting into and being fed upon by the media. And we buy into whatever they portray to us. So we don't even think about the types of casualties that have happened in Iraq, the type of children that have been killed, the numbers of children that have been killed, the numbers of families that have been destroyed, the hopes and the dreams that have been destroyed because of American bombs and because of American bullets and because of an occupying army. That's why we're in the streets. That's why we must remain in the streets, because we can never, ever turn an empire around until we have the courage to resist that empire every place and everywhere it stands and continue to challenge them on whatever rhetoric that they use. Human lives, they talk about collateral damage. Collateral damages human lives. We need to understand that. The blood flows. One of the things that I've recently been teaching in my church is from the book of Revelation. Book of Revelation is a very interesting book to read. Unfortunately, we have spiritualized that book so that it has no relevance in the types of things that are going on. But one of the things that John the Revelator talks about in Revelation is the empire. Is the empire and all of the nations that need to grovel on its knees at that empire. Then it was wrong. Today, the empire is the United States. But I'm just thankful that there are faithful people in the belly of the beast. I'm thankful that there's faithful people in the midst of this Babylon. I'm thankful that there's faithful people that will not shut up. I'm thankful that we will not sit down. I'm thankful that we will not be quiet. I'm thankful that we will march and speak and stand up and do what needs to be done until we tame this beast and make it into something that we can be proud of. You know, somebody said once upon a time, I think I heard Reverend Sharpton say this, and I thought it was an interesting analogy. He talked about Ray Charles singing America the Beautiful, right, for spacious skies and all that other type of stuff. And then he reminds us that Ray Charles hasn't seen a thing from the day he was born. And so what Ray Charles is singing about, Reverend Sharpton went on to say, was not necessarily what exists, but what he hopes to create. And sisters and brothers, we are marching against what exists, but we're not just marching against, we're marching for what we hope to create. We hope to create a place where justice does roll down like waters, as it says in Amos and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. We hope to create a society where we will coexist as equals and not as superiors to the rest of the world. We hope to create a nation that is not always manipulating people around the world, such as in Iraq, or turning their backs upon Palestinians who have legitimate struggles, or sending advisors down to Colombia that we've been sending down since the mid-60s, right? We hope to create a society that builds up the potential of human life instead of supporting the greedy that goes in and steals whatever they can steal. It will not be in our name. We will march and we will stand until there is no more breath left in our lungs. We are the people, and the people aim to rule. God bless you and continue to march.
Reverend Graylin Hagler, the pastor of the Plymouth Congregational Church, speaking at a D.C. Anti-War Network event at St. Stephen Church in Washington, D.C. Thanks to Fred Nugent, Tom Gomez, and Reem Kathuda for production assistance with that segment. Lakota Elder Johnson Holy Rock has seen and done more than most people in his 80-plus years. The former two-time Oglala Sioux tribal president, tribal councilman, rancher, and soldier now serves his people as the tribe's fifth member, a position that requires an in-depth knowledge of treaties and treaty rights. Holy Rock possesses that knowledge as well as a greater awareness of the U.S. Constitution than many non-natives. But the well-respected Holy Rock recently invited Peace Watch correspondent Jim Kent to his office to share his views on another topic that's become even more of a concern to him, the invasion of Iraq.
On a warm afternoon in early April, Lakota Elder Johnson Holy Rock sits in his office on the Pine Ridge Reservation contemplating the past. He recalls coming home from World War II after serving in the Army to the same reservation lifestyle he'd left and wondering just what he'd been fighting for. Holy Rock says he now wonders why Native American and other U.S. troops are in Iraq.
What are we really fighting for? I myself spent 3 years of my life in military forces fighting in the war. When I came back, I didn't gain anything by it. In fact, it was in worse shape than it was before I left. And when I came back, it was just as difficult to make a life as it was before. And yet, we are required to go and engage in a war. Really, it's not a war. I don't know what they call it. Congress didn't declare it. The man in the White House decided that he didn't like the fellow that was heading the country over there. But it's their business. That's the people. And if the people tolerate that type of life, that's their right to exist as they are. If they don't want to put up a fight, if they want to live under that method of existence, that's their right.
The Lakota Elder sees many similarities between Native American history and what the people of Iraq are now experiencing. Holy Rock says the federal government's insistence that the people in Iraq live a certain way reflects the same preoccupation with assimilating Native Americans that has existed in America for 500 years.
And just as this nation disagreed that the Indian cannot exist as an Indian, must become a main part of the mainstream of American society. And yet an inborn grain of resistance still exists. We are still Indian. Nobody can change that. And we adjust to it. We live under it. Just as the people over there live under the Iraqi leadership, they accept it. Some say they're forced, they live in slavery, but so are we. We live in a restricted area. Homeland security is nothing new to us. We've always lived a restricted life. I'm sorry that I ever shouldered a gun and spent 3 years of my life walking all over in a war supposedly to make life a little better for myself, which has not happened.
As the final hypocrisy of a government that regularly breaks its own treaties with Native Americans, Holy Rock points to the condemnation of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction by a country whose own nuclear arsenal is, to say the least, overpowering.
If there's going to be inspections, it should be to be fair to everyone all over the world. They should inspect each other. No one has ever come here to inspect us because of our sovereignty. Does Iraq have sovereignty? We're all supposed to coexist under whatever circumstances develop. And yet we feel that we have made ourselves self-appointed authority to tell them what not or what to do. It seems to be a world phenomenon. When the Secretary of Defense warned the countries around Iraq to not to meddle in their war, made me think, what are we doing over there?
As Johnson Holy Rock returns to his most current struggle with the federal government, Lakota water rights, he says he may not have a solution for the current crisis the people of Iraq are facing, but he does have a solution for the Lakota Nation.
Just like they're trying to make a state for Palestine, we want a state to ourselves, too, so we can have our own laws and our own ways of doing things and not be made to do it under the threat of violence or under restrictive laws that are discriminatory, even under the constitution, supposedly, of a people who wanted to be free from such activity.
I'm Jim Kent with Lakota Elder Johnson Holy Rock on the Pine Ridge Reservation.
Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Adel Hamid of KPFA, Eddie Becker, Ingrid Drake, Richard Wright, Anthony Sloan, and Aaron Glantz. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Without your financial support, Peace Watch will cease to exist. It's your financial support that makes this program possible. So please, pledge your support through our secure online website at pacifica.org, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. That's pacifica.org. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback at peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.